Welcome back to another episode of the GPP. I am your host, as always, the Squat Father, giving you knowledge and practical takeaways to improve your own general physical preparedness. Episode 11? Yeah, episode 11 of season 2. And this one, 100%. There's no doubt in my mind, this is going to be a top 11 episode. And that there's a lot of episodes from this season that'll come out. This one will definitely be top 11 of the episodes that we have released so far. Is that bad joke? Am I done with that one? Can I stop? I'm going to stop using that one because last week I said it's going to be the top 10. Last week probably wasn't very funny. This week, definitely not very funny. But what is funny is the conditions under which I am recording this podcast. This is the first time in the history of Gifted, of my life, of the podcast, that I have recorded an episode with what sounds like a live mariachi concert going on outside. So I'm not sure that it's coming across. I can hear it pretty well because it's pretty loud. It's unbelievably loud. Far too loud. Like, I get that you're laying down a roof and that's loud. So the music needs to be loud. But this is way too much. So what I'm going to do, because I don't think that it's going to be coming through with the mic, with the noise cancellation, Jake, I want you to hit him with a quick 10 to 15 seconds of mariachi. You can cut away from me, hit them with the mariachi. Hey, how was that? Not too bad, right? It's not too bad. There are a lot worse things that could be going on, a lot worse sounds that I could be listening to, as opposed to mariachi. Now, Jake, show them the most annoying sound in the world from Dumb and Dumber.
Want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Guys! Guys! Guys!
Fellas.
That's a great movie, right? That's a classic. That is a classic. Where are all the movies like that? They don't make them like that anymore. This episode, getting into our actual stuff here now, this episode is sponsored by Gifted HQ, your home for the best one-on-one coaching experience in the world, known to man, possibly the galaxy, with all the possible appearances of alien technology that we've seen recently. I don't want to say in the galaxy for sure, for fear of being smited down by one of these aliens. So whether you're competitive, you're a bodybuilder, powerlifter, weightlifter, we do that, or you're a lifestyle client just looking to get in better shape and improve your health so that your doctor stops yelling at you and your significant other thinks that you are sexier when you take your clothes off, we are the spot. And Jake, put up what I put on my story. We are now cheaper than Ozempic. Ozempic, $297 a month. I think it was $297, $287 maybe. That's fucking crazy. That is crazy expensive. Those results won't last, but signing up with the Gifted Coach for $200 to $250 a month, those are the results that'll last. Hey, now that we're at this part of the episode, we're getting through all of our ad read and whatnot, just take a quick second. Leave us a review, like the video, subscribe, send it to a friend, have your friend send it to another friend, send it in the group chat with the boys, say something like, hey, I know there are a lot of fitness podcasts out there that you have to choose from. They're kind of played out, but this one goes above and beyond. The commentary is funny, but also enlightening. It gives me the knowledge and practical takeaways to improve my own general physical preparedness. That's a here right there. That'll resonate with the boys and the ladies of your group chat. They'll definitely want to watch. Visit Gifted HQ. All the things that you need, one-on-one coaching, our Gifted Express, our automated coaching features, training and endurance templates. We got cookbooks. We got dope-ass apparel. We got everything you'd want on there. Go over to giftedhq.com. Click around. Find something that fits your needs. Put in your credit card info. Buy it. You will not regret it. Coming up on 10,000 orders through the Gifted HQ website. Not a single person, maybe, has ever regretted that purchase. So you can be one of those. Last but not least, this week's offering from us to you. This is going to be your last chance to sign up for the Gifted Disconnect, which is our yearly large-scale retreat. We are going to Costa Rica, a 10-day all-inclusive vacation for you and yours for the low price of $1,500 with payment plans available. That's 10 days, $1,500, all-inclusive. I wish you really good luck. Seriously, I wish you the best of luck in finding a vacation that's even close to that, where your food, your excursions, your fun, your learning experiences, your community events, all of that are included for the price of $150 a day. You won't find it because it doesn't exist. Go ahead and sign up today. Jake's got all the links for you guys in the description down below. If you're going to navigate away, you got to scroll down anyway. Do the like and subscribe and notification bell. Give that algorithm a little tickle tickle, if you will. All right. Bringing us into our first segment of the day. First segment of the day is going to be memes and fangs. All right. Our first memes and things is a post that I need you guys to maybe help me with on this one. I think that I am missing the joke. All right. So it's a reel from Brianna underscore Negron here. Sorry if I'm pronouncing your name wrong. And sorry if I'm taking your content out of context. I don't want to go look at your other posts. I don't have time and I can't be bothered. So her post, she's doing hip thrusts. This is actually a really cool hip thrust machine, honestly, with the back pad like that. I haven't seen that in any local gyms around here. But when they tell you to stop doing hip thrusts because it lowers your chance of pregnancy. So I tried to do a Google Scholar on like hip hinging exercises and like anteriorly loaded exercises with a barbell in the pelvic region, compression of the uterus and the effect of like possible pregnancy. I couldn't find anything. So if there is something that I missed and you're aware of some research or some sort of, you know, mechanism or method by which doing heavy hip thrusts, compression of that area or the movement as a whole decreases likelihood or lowers your chance of pregnancy, please send that my way. I would like to read that. I would like to learn some more about that. My initial reading of the post was that this is a post that's like, do hip thrusts when you're pregnant, and that's going to be like a way to get out of that, if you're catching my drift here, which is, there are people who probably resonate with that content. I think it's kind of strange content to go that route. I tried to read through the comments here to get a little bit more information on this, and I didn't really find any help. So I really need you guys. This is more like a memes and things that I'm throwing out into the community. What's up? It's me, your friendly neighborhood boomer, the squad father. Try and help me out here in understanding how hip thrusts could lower your chance of pregnancy. The more I look at this, the more I think that this is just a girl who's making a statement of like, you know, an exercise could lower your chance of pregnancy. I don't want to get pregnant, so I'm going to keep doing it. Okay, that's fine. That's okay. That's a good post. It's got 250,000 to 350,000 likes. There are clearly a lot of people out there who agree with this. Top comment goes to, let's see if I can find it. Clear cut underscore nutrition. It was a bodybuilder who was quite jacked. I look at his profile. Dude is very, very jacked. So kudos to you. And got a good comment here. He says, funny, whenever I do a hip thrust, my wife gets pregnant. Need to look into this. Someone else in the comments said that the hip thrust for men is the Uno reverse card that gets people pregnant. I like that. That's good, wholesome fun right there. Our next piece of memes and things is from our good friend, Stu McGill. Stuart McGill, the McGill Big Three or whatever the hell it's called. So Stuart McGill kind of rose to prominence in the fitness space because he actually used to put out very helpful content, like the Big Three or the Big Four. It's eluding me right now what they actually are, the movements and whatnot. But actually helpful content, like some good, you know, reductionist pullback movements that you can do to test your core to see kind of if your core is weak, and how that may be influencing kind of your training as a whole. Yup, good. Net positive, I think, overall, in terms of the industry, right? That's how people blow up. And then what happened, and we saw the same thing happen with Squat U. Squat U originally grew his following of millions of people by putting out genuinely helpful content, reducing fear around the squat, specifically a full depth squat, how to get into that full depth squat, the role of footwear in that, getting into that deep position, how to go, if you can't do a barbell back squat, how to pull back to maybe a front squat or maybe a goblet squat, or maybe it's holding a plate out in front. These movements that you can then build into the full squat, why you might not be able to get into that, why you shouldn't be scared of squatting deep, and why loading a deep full range of motion squat is going to be beneficial. So just like McGill, Squat U got popular putting out really good content, really helpful content. But then, and I kind of call this the content creators, the influencers curse, is you think that if I'm to continue to grow my following, I need to not post that same content because my followers have already seen that. If I'm going to attract new followers, I need to make spins off of that content. I can't just keep posting this same helpful stuff. I need to start making hot takes. I need to take it to the next level of saying things that'll resonate with a new audience. And this is backwards because most people who are consuming the McGill style content or the Squat U style, very lower level, if you will, getting into training content, are the people that make up the majority of the fitness space, the health and fitness space, which is people who are just getting into it for the first time. They're just consuming this content for the first time ever. So if Squat U just continues to put out spins on the same, roughly the same, helpful content, he is never going to run out of an audience because there will always be people entering the fitness space looking for that style of low-level, understandable, I'm just getting into working out fitness. He'll never run out of those people. But what happens is you get this idea that, all right, I've already attracted and all of those people already follow me. I need to come up with something new to attract a new audience. And I think that's what McGill is doing here with this video. Jake, you can just let the video run. It's about, should 50-year-olds squat and deadlift?
What are your goals? Oh, I want to set a personal best in deadlift. And I said, really? Would you rather, as your goal, have the ability to play with your grandchildren on the floor when you're 80 and get off the floor? So you can't have both. If you think you're going to continue having deadlift personal bests, you will not. You will have artificial hips. How many old powerlifters do you know? Do you really want to be like that group of athletes?
On the day I was born, the nurses. And the overall gist of the video is basically that if you are above the age of 50, you're in your 50s, you're in your 60s, the goal is to stop going for, or what you, the mindset that you should have rather, is that you should stop going for PRs in your squat and your deadlift. And McGill goes as far to say in this video, if you want to have a enriched life, you want to roll around on the ground and play with your kids and your grandkids and pick them up and do all the activities, you need to completely abandon the idea that going for squat and deadlift PRs is something that's going to benefit you, even taking the leap saying this will directly hurt you later on in life. And it's, you know, it's something that is very, very easy to disprove. And in this post by Alec Blennis that I have here, he kind of does exactly that. Joe Stockinger, deadlifting 405 for a triple at 90 years old. You know, we've got hundreds and hundreds of 50, 60, 70, 80-year-olds with USA Powerlifting recorded scores in the database. These are all individuals who are doing this. There are a ton of them. 500 for people over 80, 10,000 for lifters over 70, 20,000 for lifters over 60. These are huge numbers of individuals who are pursuing squat, bench, and deadlift PRs into their later years. And there's even a good amount of research that people, elderly people, master's level trainees. I don't like calling them elderly people. That's like you're in a retirement home. Master's level athletes, people over the age of 50, finding resistance training for the first time in their life, getting stronger in those compound movements, squatting, benching, deadlifting, the ones that McGill highlights as being dangerous, and their life improves because of it. Increased muscle mass, increased reaction time, ability to save yourself from falls, increased bone mineral density. So if you do fall, you're less likely to suffer fractures, increased ability to go through activities of daily life at a lower subjective score of effort, meaning that the things that they do on a day-to-day life, get up out of a chair, go grocery shopping, check the mail, play with my kids, play with my grandkids, you know, load stuff from my car into my house, reach stuff on high shelves, all of that stuff becomes easier with a greater amount of muscle mass, functional strength, and cardiovascular capacity, which is a separate discussion from this, but getting stronger, building muscle in your later years, 100% decreases the risk of some of those common increases in all-cause mortality. Mainly what I'm speaking about here is like slip and fall or trip and fall injuries that are so detrimental to our master's population. So McGill is, he's lost in the sauce. He's got the content creator's curse. He's got the mind virus. He thinks he needs to say crazier and crazier stuff to attract people and keep the eyes on him. Happens to a lot of people when they reach this level of kind of notoriety on the internet. I need to say the next insane thing to drum up the engagement again, when you could have just doubled down on continuing to produce helpful content. Last but not least in our memes and things is another. So the first one and the third one here. So the hip thrust post confused me. This one also confused me. So I'm just going to pull it up on my computer just so I have it right in front of me. So I have all the assets here in front of me. Because I don't want to miss any pieces of it, right? This is an important one to me. All right, I was checking the score to the Super Bowl because cable TV is how you curse your brain. Media uses commercials to poison your brain and make you dumb. So I don't have cable TV anymore. I just check the internet where I get ads sent to me that also poison my brain like this. All right. So this is an ad from, I didn't click on it because that lets the algorithm demons into your phone. And then when they're in your phone, they can start to control what you see. And then that plants the mind virus deeper. And it also uses your IP address to influence what ads people are seeing on your internet. And it would thus poison Jimmy and Peepo as well. So I didn't click on this, but I didn't click on it, not because I don't love you and not because I didn't want to do my research. I was protecting my family. This comes from, the ad is from Mad Muscles, is I believe the company, the brand, not 100% sure. And it's promoting a no alcohol challenge. But I'm very confused on what the target demographic is. I think that a no alcohol challenge is good. I think a lot of people would benefit from not drinking alcohol for at least some period of time in their life, reduce those empty calories, decrease your body weight, decrease your body fat, and get a little healthier because of that. I think that's good. Where I have an issue with this is, who is this marketed at? Who is this marketed at? Is this a person that I don't know? Is this a famous person and I don't know them? Because to me, this is like, hey, if you are a polygamous cowboy like myself who maybe uses some decent dosages of PEDs. Don't think I don't see this guy's forearm veins. This guy's forearm veins are ridiculous. He also definitely shaves his arms. Not a lot of real true cowboys that shave their arms now, are there? So if you're a polygamous, role-playing, LARPing cowboy who wants to kick your alcohol problem, you want to take this challenge from Mad Muscles. Why was this said to me? Why am I getting this targeted ad? I'm not polygamous. I'm not a cowboy. I'm not a LARPer. I don't shave my arms, and I don't have a drinking problem. Why is this coming at me? What did I search? What did I look up at some point in my life to get this ad targeted at me? Do you guys get this? Do you guys get the same thing where you get these targeted ads? Like, what is this? I've never looked this up. I've never Googled this. I am not even close to what the target demographic is here. How is this making its way to me? That's how I felt when I saw this. I was very confused. I screenshot it immediately. I sent it in the Gifted Coaches group chat. And I said, guys, what did I do to deserve this? And everyone said really mean things about me. So I just closed out of the app. And instead of dealing with those negative things about myself, which may or may not be true, I completely ignored them. I asked them to delete those messages so that I could move on with my life, move on with my day, my evening in a productive manner instead of dealing with those mostly unfounded allegations. But if you get any ads like this, feel free to send them to me. I love stuff like this. If you think that you understand what's going on here in this no alcohol challenge, please, I'm begging you, please help me out. Help me understand. I don't understand how hip thrusts decrease the likelihood of pregnancy, and I sure as hell don't understand how a no alcohol challenge geared towards polygamous LARPing cowboys is up my alley. But the more I talk about it, the more I kind of want to do it. The more I kind of want to go back and I kind of want to click on that. So you could say it's actually working out. All right, let's get into our next segment, which of course is short form turned long form content. First, short term term. That's a tough one to say. Jake might have to come up with a new segment name there. Short form turned long form content of the day comes from Mr. Jerry Beans himself, the man, the myth, the legend over on the bodybuilding side of what we do at Gifted HQ. Now, Jeremy in this post, I think, addresses on the women's competitive bodybuilding side probably the biggest question that I get from new competitors coming to me. And that question is, should I compete in wellness or bikini? 95% of the time, the answer for a first-time competitor is going to be start in bikini, build yourself into wellness. And that's largely because the amount of muscle mass that you need in your legs, even at the amateur level, as a wellness competitor, is way more than people realize. The best wellness competitors in the world, when you just zoom out and you look at, okay, Olympia, best competitors in the world, what do these girls look like? Their legs are the size of women's physique competitors. Most of the time, they're very short. They're 5'1", 5'2", on a compact frame where building the requisite amount of muscle is an extremely... Like, girls come to me and they're like 5'6", 5'7". They're like, I think I want to compete in wellness. It's like, okay, are you comfortable gaining to 185 pounds in the offseason? Oh, no, I'd rather stay at like 130. It's like, you'll never be a wellness competitor in your entire life because you can't put that amount of muscle on your frame without some serious pharmaceutical intervention here. So Jeremy does a really good job here of going through what's actually required and if you are ready for wellness. The first thing to knock out is that your upper body needs to be slightly larger than bikini, not significantly larger and not to the point that you look like a fitness or a figure competitor. We don't want to see the super wide clavicles, massive delts, and really well-developed lats. We want to see an upper body that's slightly bigger than bikini, but not very much. Where we see the large size difference is obviously in the lower body. And while comparing the conditioning of a bikini competitor to a wellness competitor, most of the levels that they compete at, they'll be very, very similar. But as you get to the higher and higher levels of competition, your wellness competitors will be significantly more conditioned. There will be some vasculature. There will be some very, very clear separation in the hamstrings, between the muscles in the hamstrings. You'll see full separation. For a bikini girl, there's going to be separation between the glute and the hamstring groups as a whole. In a wellness competitor, the conditioning is going to be the point where you can actually see separation in the hamstring itself. So you can see the multiple muscles that make up the hamstring. Probably your biggest difference. Because of the way that they pose, a lot of wellness girls aren't going to be hitting a quad pose where you could see separation between all their quad muscles. But for a wellness competitor who's in shape for show, if you were to just tell them to flex their quads from the front, you would also see that separation there. And then Jeremy breaks down kind of the big pieces here of what you want to hit. It's an hourglass shape. And the most important muscle group is obviously going to be the glutes. Glutes are by far, if your glutes are lacking, if your glutes aren't like, if you, when you turn around and you hit a back pose, if people aren't like, holy mother of God, those are some glutes, you're a bikini girl. You're not a wellness girl yet. You really need to build those. And Jeremy's going to take the time, and I'm looking forward to looking at these in future episodes, to separate out the other divisions as well. I think this is one of the hardest things when you first get into competing, is finding the division that works best for you. On the women's side, it's even more challenging. It's a little more blurry from one division to the next. So what makes a bikini competitor versus a wellness competitor versus figure, fitness, and bodybuilding? So really like this one from Jeremy. I think with wellness being such a popular division now, it does make sense to kind of highlight what to expect, so that you can avoid some possible embarrassment of getting on stage and not truly being ready for the division that you're in. The next post here comes from Yours Truly. I see people talk about this a lot, and I think that it gets shared a lot, whether it's from your science communicators that are taking it from a research standpoint. So the topic of discussion is NEAT, non-exercise activity thermogenesis, how much you move around or your activity outside of actually training. So this isn't lifting weights. This isn't structured cardio. This is simply how much you move around. And it's usually quantified by looking at the total amount of daily steps that you take, or your daily step average over the course of a week. Now, your science communicators will point to the fact that individuals who take, you know, a stepwise greater and greater sum of steps on a daily basis have lower risk of all-cause mortality. All-cause mortality, defined simply, is dying of something that you shouldn't have died to before you should have died. So all-cause mortality, like, I live a sedentary lifestyle, I got type 2 diabetes, I had complications from type 2 diabetes, I died at, you know, 51 years old, when normal lifespan for an American male is, just throwing out numbers, 81 years old. So dying 30 years early because of that comorbidity that increased my all-cause mortality. So that's what we mean there. So science communicators will say things like, you know, when you go from 5,000 to 8,000 to 10,000 to 12,000 steps, you see this precipitous drop-off in all-cause mortality, meaning that people who move around more tend to live longer. It's a function of increased daily physical activity, the increase in cardiorespiratory fitness that we see in these individuals, the greater impact on weight control and body fat reduction as a result of moving around more. Less on the science and research and, science communicator side of things is the coaching side of things. And a lot of coaches are very reductionist in the way that they say this. And just, I just get my clients to take 10,000 steps a day. Like, yes, you know, I have clients that come in very low step count. You know, I just set them on a 10,000 step count and then I let them go from there. And for me, kind of looking at this as a whole, more holistically, like, this is kind of crazy to say that. Like, I have a client at 3,000 steps a day. I just tell them to take 10,000 steps a day. A 7,000 step count daily difference is the equivalent of like 3 to 3.5 miles of walking every day. So they'll say, oh, you know, just use simple strategies, right? Like, park further away at the grocery store, take the stairs instead of the escalator, get up and go for a 10-minute walk every morning. It's like, those strategies will increase your steps by like 2,000 or 3,000 at most. Okay, cool. We've gone from 3,000 to 5,000. Where the hell are you going to get the other 5,000 from? Oh, they're just got to go take those steps. It's like this. It's not a real solution that you're giving people. It's the same thing as being like, oh, you eat 3,000 calories a day and you're gaining weight. Just cut that down to 1,500 calories a day and you'll lose weight. Well, you know, my appetite, you know, I'm hungrier than for, well, just eat the 1,500 calories. Like, what are you doing? That's the same thing as saying, oh, just take the 10,000 steps. Just do it. What are you talking about? So I think it's terrible advice to just be like, I set people at 10,000 a day. You're healthier. You'll lose weight easier. No shit. Same thing could be said if you cut someone's calories completely in half. Does it make it good advice? So I gave some strategies here to increase the rate of fat loss that are more advanced than just, hey, just take more steps. Just go outside. Walk around more. What are you doing? Are you an idiot or something? The first one being increase your step count by a modest amount. 3,000 to 10,000. It's not a real solution. It's impossible. It's impossible for most people to fit that in their daily life if these are real people that we're working with here. So I said increase by 2,500 to 3,000. That's a 20-minute walk. That's the equivalent of, you know, parking further away, taking the stairs, all of that stuff. Going for a 5 to 10-minute walk when you get frustrated at work or when you need a break. Those are strategies that can get you an extra 2,500 to 3,000 a day, which helps. It helps, right? It's more. It's really like doubling up their step count. So it does help without making it such an outlandish goal that's so hard to reach that when people fail at it, they feel like they're failing at the plan as a whole. Set your people up for success. Next up is going to be cut your daily calories by another 100 to 150. This is a relatively small amount of calories to cut. It's the equivalent of like 25 to 40 grams of carbohydrates. So, you know, the equivalent of moving one of your sugar-sweetened beverages over to a diet beverage. Same exact outcome. And it's the equivalent of like 2,000 to 3,000 steps right there. So cutting those 25 to 30 grams of carbs, significantly easier, less time consuming than, you know, an extra 7,000 steps a day. Next strategy would be do some higher intensity cardio. So some moderate, high intensity, maybe some interval style cardio. Interval style cardio is usually more interesting for people. It keeps people engaged for longer and it burns more energy, more calories per unit time. So yes, you can increase your steps by 5,000 and use that to burn an additional 200 calories, or you can hop on a cardio machine at 10 calories per minute for 20 minutes, and what would have taken you 40 to 45 minutes now takes you 15 to 20 minutes, and you're done. So I find that to be a better strategy. It also hits kind of some of those higher thresholds for, you know, cardiovascular stimulus, where like walking for people who are really, really out of shape is a good cardiovascular stimulus for improvements in that specific system. But as soon as you exit the, you know, the complete stark beginner, brand new to training, zero training whatsoever, you really have to dip into the moderate and high intensity if you want to see continued adaptations in the cardiovascular system. Last but not least, and I think this is probably the most impactful strategy here for long-term adherence, is to find a leisure time activity that isn't sitting on your butt and watching TV. So you can play basketball, play pickleball, you can golf, you can go to the bowling alley and play Dance Dance Revolution, you can play hopscotch, you can play double dutch. You can go throw a baseball with your kid. I don't really care what it is. Just use less of your downtime to sit around and do nothing and move around. And your step count will skyrocket. It won't be something where it's like, God, I gotta go do my steps. It's like, okay, cool. Like, I'm done with work today. I can go throw the ball with Timmy, or I'm done. Like, I can go play 30 minutes of basketball with my friends. It's gonna be something that you enjoy. I even included making love in here. So if you are an active love maker, and if you're not, you should be, that's gonna burn some calories as well. And no one complains about that as a way to increase their physical activity. So find some physical activity that you actually enjoy. Use that as a way to expend more energy rather than, oh, just go outside and go for a walk, listen to an audiobook, put on a podcast. That's advice that works for some people, but it doesn't work for everyone. And if we're trying to help as many people as possible, the advice that we've put out should apply to as many people. It should be broad and it should apply to as many people as possible. I think these four strategies right here, everyone in the world can find at least one of these that they use to increase their NEAT, increase their energy expenditure throughout the day, and get better health, fitness, and weight loss outcomes as a result of that. Jake told me to do a mid-roll gifted ad read right now, but I'm not listening. I'm going rogue today. The mariachi band. Jake, give him another 10 seconds of mariachi. The mariachi band has me feeling crazy. I hope it has you feeling crazy too. This is a call to action. We're not going to say it's a call to violence, and we're not going to say it's a threat, but this is a call to action against the owners of the Gifted HQ Instagram. Jake, put it right there. Link it in the notes. Guys, this is our Instagram. We are Gifted HQ. Look at our followers. Look at the money that we make. Look at the revenue that we do. Look at the size of our operation at Gifted HQ. And then look at these jabronis. Look at these fuckers stealing our name. Guys, I need you to be messaging them. I need you to be commenting on their posts. They post like once every four freaking months. Comment on their posts. Report their account for impersonation. We deserve the real Gifted HQ account, not Gifted underscore HQ. The real Gifted HQ is our birthright. Rick Ross said it, and I'll reiterate it. Big bank take little bank. We are big bank. They are little bank. We take them. DM them. Report them. Do whatever you got to do. My gifted loyalists, this is where we need you. We need to commit a small degree, a light degree of Instagram bullying to make this happen. I'll have you guys know I messaged them once a day for 60 days straight. I got no response. So it's going to take a concerted effort from all of us. Maybe you even sneak it in. You're like, hey, I'm interested in your service. So I'd love to talk more. Get them to message you back. And they'd be like, hey, delete this account. They can even have gifted underscore HQ. We'll even give them gifted underscore HQ, but we deserve the real gifted HQ. Big bank, take low bank. Okay, that's our mid-roll gifted ad read. And that brings us right into our next segment, my favorite segment of the entire podcast, which is where we highlight the client of the month and the client of the week. Yes, week, not month. Well, we can upgrade this to client of the month as well, just because we love him so much. He's not just a gifted client. He's also a gifted coach. Mr. Sir, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Mike Taylor himself, who competed not last weekend. Was it? No, not last weekend. 2 weekends ago in his latest powerlifting meet where he posted a 21-pound PR total. He went 6'11 on the squat, 352. Oh, that was a PR. 352 on bench and 683 on the deadlift. I believe the deadlift was also a PR, bringing him to a 1646 total, 21-pound PR. Missed his top bench, missed his top deadlift. Both are numbers that he has hit before in training. So the next time Mike comes to the platform, which might be sooner rather than later, kind of just depends what he and Tombot are cooking up at this exact moment. But when Mike steps on that platform again, I think that it's very, very plausible that we see a bench that's over 365, a deadlift that's over 700 or above, and then we see yet again another PR total pushing him very, very close, if not over, that 1,700-pound total. Mike is also extremely busy with his work schedule. He's an amazing dad. He's an awesome husband to his wife. He's a great practitioner in his day-to-day job. Tons of commitments and responsibilities with where he works. Still does a great job of seeing clients, working with clients, writing programming, doing returning to training consults through Gifted HQ. We appreciate Mike, our athlete of the week. We see his success. We see his mustache. And we want him to know that we really appreciate all that he does for Gifted, to represent himself, to represent his coach, to represent his family, and to just be an amazing and awesome dude. Mike, we love you. Last but not least, let us wrap things up. Our Reddit questions. Jake told me that he's going to not only dip into Reddit, he's also going to go over to Quora. Quora is where you find the worst of the worst. Quora is where people go when they have no clue about anything. They ain't ever heard of nothing. Nothing at all. They ain't heard of it. So they go over to Quora and they ask their questions. And the answer section over there is aggressive. So, Savior, coming in. I'm going to not answer your questions aggressively. I'm going to answer them for real, no matter how stupid they are. Reddit is a little bit further along. It's like people who have been training for a little while. They've been reading about training. They know a little bit about nutrition. They've heard of intermittent fasting. They're just not sure what the benefits are. They understand kind of what HIIT, high-intensity training, is with training to failure and all that, but they want to know how that compares to other styles of training. There's some nuance that exists on Reddit. You can find some serious dumbasses on Reddit too, but there is a little bit more nuance. So we're going to mix it up. We're going to do some from Reddit, which is where we find some decent questions. Then we're going to Quora, really dig at the bottom of the barrel here and see what we can find for you guys. But this week is all about our Reddit questions. Our first Reddit question, I'm going to pull it up just so I have it in front of me so I can read it, because last week I didn't read it. I kind of just like summarized it. And I didn't really like that. I didn't like how that felt. Our first one is, Jake, it is 4680. Jake, did you delete it? Where's 4680? Oh, there it is. I'm accusing you of deleting things. You didn't do anything. You left it right where it was. All right. Our first question comes from Black and White Might. It says, hello all. I have just recently started on my fitness journey. My main goal is to build larger arms in the next 6 months. You came to the right place, brother. These things have been 16 inches since I was like 17 years old, and I'm now 32. So if anyone knows about not making arm progress for 15 years straight, it's your boy. I'm ready to answer this question. Currently, I do biceps one day, triceps the next, 6 days out of the week, 10 exercises, usually close to failure. Okay, I didn't read all of this question when I first looked through it. 10 exercises, is that per session? No, that can't be. There's no way. There's absolutely no way. You know what? I'm going to read this at face value. That is 10 exercises per... No, that can't be... No. There's no way. I can't even name 10 bicep exercises and 10 tricep exercises. That has to be 10 exercises across the entire week. So that would be he's training 30. No, that math doesn't add up. I think he might mean 10 exercises in a single workout. That's freaking wild. Just going to address that now. That's crazy. Don't do that. 6 days out of the week, usually close to failure. Average workout time is around an hour with a few core slash chest exercises daily as well. Okay, so it's not really just arms. He's also doing some chest. So with the chest exercises, you're going to get crossover tricep volume. So any pressing movements, you're also going to get some crossover tricep volume there. Just something to keep in mind. Arms are always a little sore, but not too bad. That shocks me. Just wait until your elbows start bleeding. My arms, are I stretch a lot. Is this too much? Do I need to do something like day one biceps, day two biceps, day three rest day? No. You don't need to do that. And repeat? I think he means day one biceps, day two triceps. I say he because there's no woman on the face of the planet that would do this training program. This is purely a guy who grew up playing with He-Man dolls and he saw those arms and he wants those. There's no woman that's like, I need my arms to be huge. I'm sure there are, but there are very few women that are just like, I'm going to train arms every single day. Especially with the chest and the core in there as well. If it had been like, oh, sometimes I train like my core and my glutes. It's like, ah, this might be a lady, but it's not. It's for sure not. This is a guy. Or is it simply alternating the targeted muscle group every day enough? Any advice is truly appreciated and will be taken into consideration. All right. I do have some advice for you, Black and White Might. First piece of advice is that you're going to grow your arms probably as much as you possibly could. And you can make them your priority in training. Your priority can still be, I want to get my muscles, my arms as big as possible, while also training the rest of your body. It's a much better way to go about this, and the variety in the training program will actually prevent you from overuse injuries. So When I'm training my biceps, elbow flexion. When I'm training my triceps, elbow extension. So if you're only training your arms and you're actually doing 10 exercises within each workout, all close to failure, your training program is essentially elbow flexion, elbow extension, elbow flexion, elbow extension, elbow flexion, elbow extension. If you're doing chest movements as well, pressing, you're also getting that loaded elbow extension in there. This is a recipe for tendonitis of the elbow. So varying your program, throwing in some legs, throwing in some back, throwing in more rest days, accumulating some of your volume. If you even were to do this, accumulating some of your volume away from failure so that it's not so taxing in those exact same movement patterns every single time, that's going to be a better way to go about this. So I understand the idea that my main goal is to grow my arms. Therefore, I will only train my arms. All of my recovery resources, all of my adaptation resources go towards growing my arms. But there are still rate limiters, physiological rate limiters, meaning a limiter to the rate at which you can improve something built into the human body that can't be overridden by, I'll just train it more, or I'll just train it harder. Those things, again, inverted U, some training your arms, good. The right amount of training your arms, perfect. Too much training your arms starts to be bad. You're dipping into that other side of the inverted U where you're going down into the overuse, injury, less adaptations from training, unable to recover, not good zone. And the research would support this. Training frequency research shows an improvement going from one time a week to two times a week. When you start to go to three times a week, four times a week, five times a week, you don't see any additional benefits because the body can really only adapt and recover from so much training volume over a single 7-day period. The consensus of the research is that's probably somewhere between 10 to 20 sets per muscle group per week. So if you're doing 10 exercises per day and you're doing that three or four times a week, you're 3-4xing the lower end of that range if you're only doing one set. If you're doing two sets or three sets, you're 9-12-15xing how much volume your body can actually benefit from. So again, way too much. Stretching, cool, fine, whatever. It's not going to help with your soreness. Your soreness is being driven by the fact that you're doing too much volume. Soreness after training, not necessarily an indication that you got a good workout. It can be a good indication that the muscle group that you worked was stimulated that day, but it's not something where like, okay, I got sore. Now I know that I got a good workout in. The last piece that I'll throw in here is this is someone who has a good intention here, a good motive based on what their goals are. But what a colossal waste of your first couple years of training it is, and the adaptations, those noob gains that you get, what a colossal waste of time it is to not be spending that time training your entire body so that your legs can grow as much as possible, your back can grow as much as possible, your shoulders, your arms, your chest, your calves, everything is going to grow as much as it possibly could in that first year, year and a half of training. To take that first year and year and a half and only train your arms, what a huge waste of that window, of that noob gains window. Take the first 2 years of training, 3 years of training, train your entire body evenly, train it hard in a sustainable fashion that sets you up for long-term success. Once you're out of that noob gains period, if all you want to do is train your arms and just train the rest of your body at maintenance, fantastic. You can absolutely do that. Stop wasting your time only training your arms for now. Counterpoint or another point here. If you do this for a year and your arms are still small, got bad news for you. You chose your parents wrong. Your genetics just ain't there for it. That brings us to our next one, which is 4735. Jake, Only one Kenobi. I like that. That's a good one. Not a bad name there. Pretty creative. Only one Kenobi says, I can't do push-ups normally on my palms due to issues with my wrists. What's better, push-ups on my fists? No wrists. Got to go fists. Or using those handle things? All right. So if the goal here is only to get better at push-ups, the only thing is like, I just want to get better at push-ups. I don't care about anything else. My goal is more push-ups. Going from your fists is fine. Setting up the handle things is fine. I also find that taking dumbbells, as long as they're not circle dumbbells that'll roll away from you, they're kind of like the hex ones that kind of sit on the ground and don't roll away. Using those is helpful as well. So if your goal is to just do push-ups, fists, fine, dumbbells, fine, handle thing, completely fine, stick with those. That's going to give you minimal pressure on your wrists. However, there's a question to answer here, and that is, why do your wrists hurt so much? You should be able to put your hand flat on the ground and support your body weight without a lot of pain, or without, you know, enough pain to make you be like, I can't do that anymore. So you might want to address that. That's something that warrants at least some sort of exploration, explanation, reasoning. Why do my wrists hurt when I put them in what is a normal position for my wrists to be in? Now, outside of just getting better at push-ups, if your goal here is to develop the muscles of your chest, your shoulders, and your triceps, there are plenty of other movements that you can choose that won't hurt your wrists that aren't push-ups. So you can choose from all sorts of movements: chest pressing, bench pressing, dumbbell pressing, flies, machines, pressing machines, plate-loaded machines. So many other choices, if the goal is just chest development, that you can choose from that aren't push-ups. So again, if your goal is, I want to grow my chest, my shoulders, and my triceps, just choose different movements that don't hurt your wrist. When you feel like your wrist has recovered enough, go back and play with push-ups. You may only be able to do a couple sets or even a couple push-ups without it starting to flare your wrist up again, but start building up your capacity in that wrist by doing one or two, and then four and five the next week, and then five and six the next week, to where your wrist starts to develop that ability to actually be in that position. So now push-ups are back in your arsenal. All right, Jake, our next one is 4738. 4738 here is from No Wise Words. No Wise Words. I think we've answered this one. I think I might have answered this one in my story already, or we might have done this in our Reddit question series back on the Reels. But I found it again, and I think it bears revisiting, because I've had a lot of conversations about squat depth recently, passive squat depth, active range of motion with people. So I did want to answer this question again, if I haven't done so already. If I have done so already. Question about squat depth. I'm a woman, recently got into lifting a few months ago. Hell yeah. Welcome to the Iron Sisterhood, my girl. Just now starting to use barbells instead of goblet squats. Cool. Started with goblet squats. Worked your way into back squats. I like that. Feel inconsistent in how far I'm going down. Very flexible. As someone who's possibly hypermobile here. If I squat as far down as possible, my butt... Okay, hypermobile, yeah. If I squat as possible, my butt touches the ground. Very long legs. I'm 181 centimeters. I don't know what that means because I'm not a communist. I'll assume that's tall. It's quite a big difference between going ass to grass and closer to parallel. I have to go down in weight if I squat all the way down. My question is, if I should squat at a higher weight, sacrificing depth, still going beneath parallel, or lower weight, focusing on depth? My reading of this question is that this is an individual who is pursuing hypertrophy. They want to grow the muscles of their legs. I'll just preface all of this with, if this is someone who is competing in powerlifting, you need to train the specific skill of squatting at a depth that maximizes the weight that you can put on the bar. For most people, that's going to be squatting to and stopping at competition depth or just below parallel. But if the question is growing your quads and your glutes as much as possible, the answer is to keep going as deep as you can, short of where you actually lose active tension on your quads and your glutes. If you were to sit your butt on the ground, there would then be no more tension in your quads and your glutes. Your back would be bearing the entirety of the load, and to then stand that back up is going to be, you know, very taxing on your lower back, which isn't what we're going for here. So you do want to stop shy of putting your butt on the ground. You really just want to focus in on that mind-muscle connection and feel where your quads and your glutes are working. Usually that's full depth with tempo, maybe a pause at the bottom. That way you can hit that full range of motion and you're not just passively unlocking your knees and your hips and just slamming into the hole and bouncing out. Bouncing it out and riding that bounce will be a skill that's specific to your weightlifters. So again, you're not an Olympic weightlifter. You're not a powerlifter. You're trying to grow the muscles of your quads and your glutes. To do that, we want, I kind of hate this terminology because like if you're just going, there's going to be active tension, but I think it resonates with people and people understand what I'm saying. Active tension in your quads and your glutes, meaning that you're feeling for that mind-muscle connection where the muscles are actually working through that full range of motion. When dealing with individuals who are hypermobile like this, I think using tempos and pauses is a great technique. It allows people to better feel for those end ranges of motion that are productive for them, as opposed to just going through this huge range of motion at an uncontrolled speed, bouncing out of the bottom and not getting much out of that. So the short answer here for our friend is just slow it down through the squat movement. You know, go as deep as you can to where you feel your quads and your glutes working through the entire range of motion. Tempo will 100% be your friend. You're definitely longer limbed here, so be patient in your muscle building goals, eat plenty, and of course, hire a gifted HQ coach to get you where you need to be. That's going to wrap up our Reddit questions, and it also finishes off with episode 11 of season 2 of the Gifted Performance Podcast. Remember, our call to action, if you hadn't done so already, if you're waiting to the end of the episode to do it, go harass our folks over at the Gifted HQ Instagram, not our Instagram, but go harass the Gifted HQ people. Let them know we want our name. It's ours. Maybe just leave them a comment that just says Big Bank, take Little Bank. And then that will be, they'll know we're coming when they hear that. But that wraps us up. I don't have any witty quips to end us with. The mariachi music has completely stopped. Stopped at about minute 45 here, so I'm sure it'll kick back on here shortly. But before it does, I'll just wrap things up. I'll tell you, stay gifted. We'll see you on the next episode. Adios.